Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 20. This is a conversation between Maitreya and Vidura. Text 36. Naikatra te jayati shalini pada padmam gnantya muhu Karatalena Patat Patangam Madhyam Vishirati Brihatstana Bharabitam Shanteva Dhrishtir Amala Sushika Samuha Naikatra te jayati shalini pada padmam. Gnantya muhu karatalena patat patangam. Madhyam vishidati brihatstana bharabithim. Shanteva drishti ramala sushiki samuha.
Shanteva drishti ramala sushika samuha.
Naikatra te jayati shalini pada padmam.
Naikatra te jayati shalini pada padmam.
Gnantya muhu karatalena patat patangam. Madhyam vishidati brihatstana bharabitam.
Madhyam vishidati brihatstana
Shanteva drishti ramala sushika samuha.
Shanteva drishti ramala sushika samuha.
Naikatra te jayati shalini pada padmam. Gnantya muhu karatalena patat patangam. Madhyam vishidati brihatstana bharabitam. Santeva drishti ramala sushika samuha. Na.
Na,
not,
ekatra,
in one place,
te,
your,
jayati,
stay,
shalini,
O beautiful woman,
padapadmam,
lotus feet,
gnantyaha,
striking,
muhu,
again and again.
Karatalena.
By the palm of the hand.
Patat.
Patat.
Bouncing.
Patangam.
The bow.
Madhyam.
Waist.
Vishidati.
Gets fatigued.
Brihat.
Full grown.
Stana.
Of your breasts.
Bhara,
by the weight,
Bhitam,
oppressed,
Shanta
Iva,
as if fatigued,
Drishti,
vision,
Amala,
clear,
Su,
beautiful, Shika.
Shika.
Your hair.
Your hair.
Samuha.
Samuha.
Bunch. Translation: O beautiful woman, when you strike the bouncing ball against the ground with your hand again and again, your lotus feet do not stay in one place. Oppressed by the weight of your full-grown breasts, your waist becomes fatigued, and your clear vision grows dull, as if it were. Pray, braid your comely hair. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The demons observe beautiful gestures in the woman's every step. Here, they praise her full-grown breasts, her scattered hair, and her movements in stepping forward and backward while playing with the ball. In every step, they enjoy her womanly beauty, and while they enjoy her beauty, their minds become agitated by sex desire. As moths at night surround a fire and are killed, so the demons become victims of the movements of the ball-like breasts of a beautiful woman. The scattered hair of a beautiful woman also affects the heart of a lusty demon. Om Aginanti Mirandasya Aginanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manubhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Darati Swaparantikam Namasreshtam Manumapi Sachiputra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Gradam Rupurim Naturingo Stavritim Radha kunda girivara mahora rika maravahasam praptaya sapatita kripaya sri gurum tam natosmi naikatrate jayati shalini pada padmam anantya muhu karatalena patat patangam madhyam vishita tibrihatstana bharabittam shante vadrishti ramala shushika samuha. O beautiful woman, when you strike the bouncing ball against the ground with your hand again and again, your lotus feet do not stay in one place. Oppressed by the weight of your full-grown breasts, your waist becomes fatigued, and your clear vision grows dull, as it were. Pray, braid your comely hair. Here we get another, some more further details of the demoniac nature of the conditioned soul. And it's these same demons who were produced from the backside of Lord Brahma that chased Lord Brahma to engage in homosex activities are now completely mesmerized by the beauty of the woman that was created and cast off from Lord Brahma as the twilight zone. The same demons. So they're not just interested in homosex, but in any sex. Bisex, bisexual. Because that is the nature of the beast, the nature of the conditioned soul. The nature of the conditioned soul is forgetfulness of Krishna, and the focus is on our sense gratification, what I can do to become satisfied in the moment, now, right now, how I can be satisfied now, how I can satisfy my immediate urges for gratification. Srila Prabhupada, in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, in the pastime of Ajamila, he says that in the streets, in these modern cities, in the streets, a half-naked girl who is drunk, embracing a man, is a common sight. It's not unusual. This is in reference to Ajamila, who was trained, he was brought up as a brahmachari, as a brahmana, and he received mantra, he received training in skills of ritual, of achan, and he was a very cultured young brahmana. But he became disturbed by seeing a prostitute embracing a shudra. But Prabhupada said, this is a daily, that was a very rare occurrence in days of yore. But it's a daily occurrence. As we go down Swanson Street, or if we get on a bus or a tram or a train, it's a daily occurrence that we can see this. Last night in the kirtan, I was chanting some rounds behind the kirtan on the steps of the State Library in La Trobe Street, in Swanson Street. And at the back of the kirtan is, you know, bellowing out the holy names, and people are becoming very attracted by hearing the sound vibration. And just behind the kirtan, there was a large group of students sitting there eating their unmentionable foodstuffs and drinking alcohol and lunging all over each other just behind the kirtan. In very, you know, intoxicated and groping each other in public on the streets in Melbourne. So Prabhupada had witnessed this in the 60s and 70s, and now it only becomes more and more degraded and more bewildering in many ways. But Prabhupada said, how is it, how could a brahmachari remain celibate in such, exposed to such sights? Very difficult to remain celibate under these conditions, to remain undisturbed. And then Prabhupada says, but you can remain undisturbed by the sight of this half-naked women embracing men, intoxicated, by following the regular principles of Krishna consciousness and chanting Hare Krishna. By chanting the holy name of the Lord and following strictly, Prabhupada says, this is the modifying agent, strictly, not whimsically, not casually, not nonchalantly, but strictly following the regulative principles. And the regulative principles are not just no meat eating, intoxication, gambling, and sex life, but no sex life. But the regulative principles, no illicit sex, the regulative principles are also positive injunctions to engage in archana, to engage in the principles of worshipping the acha vigraha as a regular principle given by the acharyas. The acharyas provide us with detailed, expansive, comprehensive process of principles that will enable us to become focused on our true identity, on our spiritual identity. What is a spiritual reality? And enable us to develop a finer intelligence, because intelligence, the function of the intelligence, buddhi, is to discriminate what is good and what is bad, what is beneficial, what is unbeneficial, what is permanent and what is temporary, asat and sat. That is a function of buddhi, of intelligence. And that intelligence, Prabhupada said, is available for even an uneducated man in the process of Krishna consciousness, or woman. Because this intelligence comes from Krishna, from the spiritual master. It doesn't come from, it's not a theoretical knowledge that we can acquire from books or from the university. In fact, Srila Prabhupada challenged the universities when he was preaching at the MIT in America. He was challenging them, where is your department for teaching about the nature of the soul? You have so many nice departments for teaching, you know, about aeronautical engineering and for medicine and for law and for so many different departments, philosophy and sociology. But where is your department for teaching about the most important subject matter, which is the soul? There's no department. And Prabhupada continued to challenge the universities and the colleges of learning that they were incomplete because they failed to acknowledge the most important field of learning, which is to know about the soul. Who am I? What am I doing here? So the Srimad Bhagavatam provides us with this information, with this knowledge, with this deep analysis of who am I and what is this material world all about? Why did we come here? What are we doing here in the material world? And how are we going to get out of this material world? This affliction that we have for material enjoyment, this attraction we have for material energy. How do we become free from that and attached to Krishna? Not just free from attachment to the material energy, because that is something we've had for millions of lifetimes. That's not easy to get rid of. But we have to become attached to something higher, param drishtva. We need to see something which is superior to what we experience, to what we equate with happiness, enjoyment, satisfaction. And that is what the Bhagavatam gives us. Bhagavatam gives us a very accessible process for cleansing the mind, cleansing the heart. And Prabhupada often equates this purification of the heart with becoming free from attachment to sense gratification and attachment to Krishna. And that is our process. Here in the Bhagavatam, in this section of the Bhagavatam, we see the asuras, and Yarudapu was giving class the other day, and he was saying how this Aho Rupam Aho Dhairyam. Oh, what a beauty! It says Prabhupada's translation. Oh, what a beauty! He's saying this is an eternal expression of the conditioned soul, the demoniac men and women, that they see some beautiful form and they're exalted at how beautiful this is, and that's for me. The beauty of that is for my satisfaction, for my eyes, for my senses. Aho rupam, aho dharyam, aho asya navavayaha. What beautiful effulgence, what beautiful youth do I perceive with my eyes? And that must be for my satisfaction, must be for my glory. In the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, we'll hear exactly the same thing. Lord Shiva approaches Krishna, and he wants, just after the churning of the ocean of the milk, and he says, "Wow, you produce such a beautiful form. I didn't get to see Mohini Murti. I want to see this form of yours as an attractive woman, a female." And there it says that Krishna smiled, and that simultaneously he was very gambira. He was very, he smiled and he was very grave at the same time. He's thinking, okay, I can show you this form, but it's going to bewilder you. This form will be bewildering, but I'll show it to you. So after some time, nothing happened. Lord Shiva's there with Parvati, and he doesn't see Krishna. He doesn't see the form. He doesn't see the Lord. And all of a sudden, in the distance, he sees this beautiful form of a woman in the forest under the trees. And he's amazed at this form. First of all, he just sees an outline. And then as it becomes more clear to his vision, as she becomes more clear to his vision, he also exclaims the same thing. Aho rupam, aho dhamma, he says. Aho rupam, what a beautiful form. I never saw such a form like this. So beautiful and so elegant and so attractive. And aho asya, same. Aho asya navayuva, navavaya. So much beauty has been encaptured in this youthful form of the Lord. And then Lord Shiva was staring at this form, and he forgot himself, and he forgot his wife who was standing next to him. He forgot his associates who were there. And he immediately, he went out to embrace this woman. He became completely bewildered by her. And she began to run away. And as she ran, the wind blew off her skirt, her sari. And she became naked in front of Lord Shiva. And he was completely mesmerized. And he chased her and chased her. And as he was chasing her, he released his semen And it said where his semen would never go in vain, so wherever it dropped on the ground, it turned into silver and gold. That's where we get our gold mines from. From Lord Shiva. And then after he was finished, he's completely exhausted. And he actually embraced this Mohini form. But because this Mohini form is God, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she was easily able to untangle herself from his embrace. And she slipped out of his embrace. And then Lord Shiva could understand that this is Krishna. Krishna has amazing potency. And even though he fell down and he became bewildered and confused and chased his form in front of his wife and his associates, he was completely appreciative of Krishna's potency. He wasn't thinking that it was such a bad thing that he got defeated by this form. He was thinking, how amazing is Krishna? That he has such a beautiful form, that I did this stupid act of chasing this form, but it was to prove that Krishna is the supreme and he can bewilder even Lord Shiva. Shiva's not bewildered by anybody or anything. He bewilders Cupid, Lord Shiva. Nobody can bewilder Lord Shiva. But Krishna can create this beautiful form. So why do we hear this in Bhagavatam? So many times we hear the statements of Pumsastriyamituni Bhavametam. And one time recently I was giving a class, a Bhagavatam class in Vrindavan. And the class was about Nivritti and Pravritti. It means like it was about controlling and expanding our sense gratification. Self-restraint and engaging in sense gratification. Pravritti Nivritti Marga. And so naturally there was reference to sex life in the purport. And so I mentioned a few times about different references to sex in the class, which I couldn't really remember at the time. But the next day I met a devotee in Delhi, because I was going between Delhi and Vrindavan for some time. And then he said to me, "You gave class yesterday in Vrindavan." I was in this lane, you know, opposite the Delhi temple, they have these two hotels, Nityananda Kutia and the Gauranga Kutia. In the Nityananda Kutia, you can stay there for free, if you know the right people. And in the Gauranga Kutia, you can stay there, but you have to pay some, whatever, 1,200 rupees or 600 if you know the right people. So I was staying, almost a permanent resident in the Nityananda Kutia, because I got to know the right people. I can share their number with you. And so I was just outside. There's a little gully, little lane, very tight, typical in Delhi, very, very overcrowded and congested. And you know, you walk down this lane, there's motorbikes and rickshaws, and you can hardly walk, but they can fit a rickshaw in there, and they can fit half a dozen motorbikes and a camel. And so he was there. He was at the shop there, one of the shops in the gully. And I came out, and he grabbed me, and he said, "You get class in Vrindavan?" I said, "Yes, bro." And I was in a rush. I was going to the immigration office. And so he said, "That was terrible class." I said, "Oh, thank you, bro." And this big guy, big Brahmacharya guy. "That was terrible class." I said, "What was bad about the class?" And he said, that really, you know, got me off guard, because I was thinking he was going to say, "Oh, that was such a nice class, Prabhu." Terrible class. Okay, good. And then he said, "All you talk about is sex. You people just talk about sex. You don't talk about anything else." And, you know, naturally my false ego, you know, I didn't talk about sex. And then I said, "Anyway, Prabhu," I didn't say anything. I said, "Prabhu, I'm in a real hurry. Can you help me get to this place?" And anyway, he didn't help me. But as I was going there, I was thinking, what did I say in that class? And then I went through all the different points, and I thought, wow, I did say a few things about sex, but it's in the Bhagavatam. And then just after that, I met one sannyasi, you know, and he said to me, you know, completely out of the blue, he just said to me, "You know what, Prana, there's a purport. I just read a purport in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada mentioned the word sex 28 times. I said, "Wow, really?" I just got chastised for talking about sex in Bhagavatam class. But that's in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, in the second chapter of the second canto of Bhagavatam. And there Srila Prabhupada, he's talking about the Virat Rupa. And in this, it's a meditation for those who haven't developed highly to a high level of Bhagavan realization. So they come to this realization through meditating on the impersonal aspect of God, his different energies, his wonderful energies. And then Prabhupada says that actually it's getting to this third chapter of the second canto where it's the transformation of heart, change of heart, pure devotional service. And he says, all right, there's this meditation, but there's a higher meditation. And if we can connect with the higher meditation, then we can become free from lower attractions, lower attachments in the material world. But we have to have a higher form of meditation. We have to absorb our consciousness in something which is greater than a lesser form. And this is not talking about gross form of sense gratification, but a lower form of the Lord's energy, like impersonal realization. But to get to a personal realization of the Lord, to meditate and to contemplate this form of Krishna and his pastimes, his lila, his activities, which is something that cleanses the heart, cetodarpana marjanam, of all the dust that's accumulated for years and years of existence. And it's not unusual, it's not something that we should be surprised that we're attracted by the material energy, that we're attracted by the beautiful form of the opposite sex. It's not surprising. It's part of our condition, it's part of the bargain, part of the deal that we have a material body. We came here because we're attracted. Aho rupam, aho dharyam. We came here for that. And the Bhagavatam is giving us a process to become free from that. The Bhagavatam identifies problems and gives solutions. It's identifying the problem, the bhavaroga. We have this disease of material attachment. All of us have the same disease of material attachment. We want to enjoy this material energy. We want to manipulate it. We want to exploit it. We want to squeeze out some energy, some excitement for me, some happiness. Now it's the comedy festival in Melbourne. So we want to get some happiness. I was coming here on the tram this morning and I went through the city and the comedy festival blasted everywhere, right? And I was thinking, you know, it's actually the material world is a miserable place. Dukalayam, it's a place for dukkha, not sukalayam. Sukalayam is a spiritual world, but the material world is dukalayam, and we have to do so many things to create an illusion of happiness in the material world. Through intoxication or through fashion or through hairstyle or through bright shining teeth or something. Whatever we have to get some nice makeup or toothpaste or something to make it look good. That the material world is not such a bad place after all. It's a good place. You know, we can enjoy here. We can really enjoy. And we can make fun of ourselves and fun of other people and we can laugh. You know, last night I was going back with Roshni, one of the young girls in the congregation, and her father. She was in New Zealand with us, and she said, "What is a comedy festival?" She didn't have a concept of what a comedy festival is. She's a 12-year-old girl, and you know, it's something that makes you laugh, makes you happy. And she said, "Well, how do they do that? What's the process for making you happy, making you laugh?" Well, they tell jokes and things like that. So she didn't have a concept for that, a reference point for a comedy festival. But actually, if you look around on the trams and on the trains and in the streets, not many people are laughing. It's quite, you know, it's a simple experiment to do, to get on a tram or a train and look around and find how many people are laughing on the tram. I mean, a few crazy people maybe, but the normal people, they're not laughing, they're not smiling. They're like, especially in the morning, they're not laughing at all. They're going to work. Maybe in the afternoon they're a little bit smiley, but in the morning time, they're not so happy. And it's because 80% of people are doing something they don't want to do. 80% of people are engaged in meaningless work. And they're doing it to pay mortgages and to pay bills and to exist in this material world. But that's not making them happy. Very few people are doing something that they want to do. They're just doing it to make money. So the point is that Bhagavatam identifies problems, and the biggest problem it says in the material world is sex life. And we can't avoid that. You might like to hear that, but it's the biggest problem. Our biggest problem is sex life, is attraction, pumsa striya, between the male and the female, and it ties a hard knot in the heart, and it creates illusion. Aham mameti, janasya mohoya, maham mameti. It creates this illusion that I'm the controller, I'm the owner, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the proprietor. Everything is for my satisfaction and my extended sense gratification. And so Lord Rishabhdev, he says, we have to overcome that mentality. Not just Rishabhdev. Practically every chapter in the Bhagavatam will tell us that we have to overcome. This is the problem. This is how we overcome the problem. And the main way we overcome the problem is by engaging in regulative principles, to engage in the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna and absorbing ourselves in a sangha, association of devotees who have identified the problem and are connected with the solution. And even though we might not always be successful in applying the solution, that we're on the right path. And we're encouraging each other to stick on the path, that this is the right choice. We made a correct choice to engage in bhakti, because this bhakti is helping us to reveal our identity, our real identity, our spiritual identity. And that spiritual identity is blissful. That is a real blissful. That is a real happiness. Our spiritual identity creates happiness, creates knowledge. And Prabhupada says very interestingly that we need knowledge to overcome our attraction for the material energy and to overcome that desire to overlord and to expand our potential for enjoying the material energy. We need knowledge. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's glorified by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya as the personality who comes to teach that, to give vairagya, vidya, nija bhakti yogam. He comes to give the knowledge of detachment. What is real detachment? And what is real knowledge? Vidya. He comes to give this spiritual knowledge. And bhakti. Nija bhakti yoga. These three things. And this is the three solutions. These are the solutions to becoming free from our attraction to the material energy. Vairagya vidya, nija bhakti yoga. And this detachment is something which is not like the same as renunciation. Not at all. This detachment is something that means that we have to work, like it says in the sixth chapter of the Gita, we have to do our work, but the work should be done without attachment to the fruits. And when we engage in work without attachment, we're cultivating vairagya. And only through vairagya we can become detached from enjoyment in the material energy, to enjoy the material energy, because we're becoming detached, we're becoming distanced, we're becoming objective and not completely subjective within the influence of the material energy. So that is something that Prabhupada says comes automatically for the devotees, vairagya and vidya. Automatically it develops. Bhagavatam says automatically it develops by doing Vasudeva Bhakti, by doing service to Krishna. Automatically we cultivate knowledge, and automatically we cultivate detachment from the material energy. Srila Prabhupada, one time he was in Washington, D.C., and the devotees were very excited because they were renting a place, but it was like a rent to purchase, a rent to own, and it was a very, very big place. And they were excited to show Prabhupada around that place. Prabhupada came in the night time. And they were showing Prabhupada, this is your room, this is where you'll sleep, this is where you'll write Bhagavatam, this is your study room, this is where the Brahmacharis will stay, this is where the Brahmacharinis will stay. It's a very massive place. And this is a big gymnasium. And we've converted this into a temple. And Prabhupada asked them many practical things about the electricity and the bills and how much the mortgage is and how much you're paying rent and everything like this. He asked them many questions. And he's very happy with the devotees, what they had done, what they had achieved. And then Prabhupada wanted to... They made some prasadam for Prabhupada. So they had some fruits and different things for Prabhupada to eat. So they're serving Prabhupada fruit. And they said, Prabhupada, this is a kiwi fruit. They were cutting up the fruits. And Prabhupada said, oh, kiwi fruit. What is this fruit? And so they got out kiwi fruit and they had different fruits. And they told Prabhupada, this is from New Zealand and this one's from this country. So he asked for some salt. He liked to put some salt on his fruit. And so he put a little salt, just a little bit of salt on the fruit. And then his Prabhupada said to them that this salt, they bought a big thing of salt. He said, a little bit of salt is nice. It's good for the fruit. It gives nice taste, enhances the taste, and it brings out the flavor in vegetables and fruits. But he said, if I put all the salt, it won't be nice. It'll be horrible. Right? It won't be healthy. It won't be good for me. A little bit of salt is good, but all the salt is not good. If I take all the salt, it won't be very good for me. And Prabhupada said, this is like the material world. We have to regulate our enjoyment in the material world. And the Vedas, Bhagavatam, gives regulation. How to regulate our life in the material world. We can't take all salt, but we can have some salt. We have to. We're here in the material world. So we have a system of vana ashram, and we can regulate how we are going to experience this material world, how we're going to live in this material world for our purification and for the purification of others via a regulated program. So he said that we even regulate sex life, that sex is allowed in this bhakti yoga process in the grihastha ashram. But then also it's not all sex. Then it's regulated also for procreation. So he said in every stage, we have to take regulated lifestyle. And this will gradually purify the conditioned soul to become more and more attached to Krishna, more and more attracted to Krishna, and less to the material energy. Recently we heard from Malati Mataji and many different devotees in Vrindavan. They were giving these presentations like Purijan Prabhu and Jagatrini Mataji will give the early days recollections down at New Nandagram, I guess. So many devotees were in Vrindavan and they were recollecting their early times with Srila Prabhupada. It was very sweet. And Malati was talking about San Francisco. She was with Prabhupada in the early days in many places, 26th Second Avenue, San Francisco, London. And she was saying that there was opposite the temple, there was a restaurant. I think that was a donut shop. I didn't get any details on that, but I'm pretty sure that was the donut shop, because Prabhupada made many references to donuts. And the devotees were, in San Francisco, they were known to be a little bit loose compared to the devotees in New York. The New York devotees were considered to be really pucker and really onto it, you know, after, you know, however many, 6 weeks. That's why they were really like the strict devotees. But the San Francisco devotees were pretty, you know, laid back and pretty cool, and it was like, whatever. So they were not into, you know, nobody was at that time into the saris and dhotis and things so much, and into many of the formalities of dress and etiquette, the finer subtleties of Krishna consciousness. And many of them were still eating in restaurants. And Prabhupada would say in lectures, you know, Monday, Wednesday and Friday lectures, that you shouldn't eat in restaurants because that affects your consciousness. He was slowly giving them, you know, introducing them to some of the important principles of Krishna consciousness. But he knew they were still eating in restaurants. So Prabhupada walked past this restaurant opposite the temple, and he looked in the window, and the devotees saw Prabhupada coming across the road. So they all ducked down. And then they thought, they were down for some time, and then they thought Prabhupada's gone, and they all got up and Prabhupada's face was there. He was looking at them. And they said, okay. And Prabhupada smiled at them. And like this, and he was teaching them that he's smiling at them saying, don't eat in the restaurant. He wasn't smiling saying, good, keep eating, it's good. He's smiling saying, you know, I caught you and don't keep coming here in the restaurant. We were listening to one lecture one time, and you know the Mr. Whippy van there in every country, some ice cream van, he puts the music and all the kids come and they take the ice cream. So the Mr. Whippy van was outside the 22nd Avenue, 1966. And you can hear it in the lecture, you can hear it in the recording, you can hear this music going in the background. And Prabhupada stopped the lecture and he said, don't go. he said, that's Maya. That ice cream man is Maya. Don't go. Stay here in the temple. And they didn't go. They stayed there. So this is really what we're looking at is the difference between the demoniac nature and the devotee nature. Prabhupada said the devotee, the demigod won't be attracted. The Lord Shiva's the bewilderment by Mohini is a very special leela to prove many different things. But generally the demigods, because they follow regulation, they don't become attracted. And they don't see a woman on her own and think, oho, rupam, oho, dharyam. They don't think like that. When they see a woman on her own, they're not going up to her and asking her, you know, where are you from? Kutastvam. The next line of questioning there is very typical of, you know, a man trying to chat up a woman and to get, you know, friendly with her. They ask this question. First question is, who are you? That they ask, the demons ask this woman. And then they say, that's the Katvam, who are you? And then, where are you from? And they have this culture to say, they're saying, I know this woman's not married. So they're saying, whose daughter are you? Or where do you come from? Kasyasi. Who do you belong to? They ask her. And in this way, since time immemorial, as Anirudhapu was saying, there's been this propensity of the conditioned soul to be attracted by and to attract the opposite sex through smooth talk or through smooth look or whatever it is. When we were coming over here from Kuala Lumpur, there were these five guys sitting in front of me, and they, I mean, they were enjoying to the maximum. These five young Lebanese guys from Melbourne, Lebanese guys with Australian accents, and they'd just been in KL and Thailand, and they just had a wow of a time, you know. And they were reliving their experiences so that we could all hear and enjoy with them what they did in Thailand and KL, and it wasn't so pleasant. And it was very close to what the demons are experiencing here, very close. A bit grosser, but very close. And so they spent, you know, the trip between KL and Melbourne is, what, 8 hours or something. They spent the 8 hours reminiscing about their feats, their victories in Thailand, and chatting up this air hostess. She was sitting, you know, she sits on that seat in front, and they were in those exit seats, and I was the one behind them. So she's sitting right in front of them, facing them, and they're here, and they're just having this wow of a time with her. And first she was really embarrassed and she was coy and shy, and then by the end of the trip she was like exchanging Instagram numbers and stuff like this, you know, like, and they won, you know, they got their, that was another prize for them. They chatted up this air hostess. This is a completely, you know, demoniac nature, and something that we might laugh at, but it's something we need to really put in perspective of our lives, of our devotional lives, and see that this is something that we're not interested in. That we want, we have a higher taste. You know, we're not. That's not the purpose of our life, is to exploit the material energy. The purpose of our life is to use the material energy for Krishna's pleasure and to engage in devotional activities that are beneficial for everybody, for ourselves and for our family, our friends, our society, and which will give glory to Krishna. And that is our real meditation. When we come to that meditation, and we'll finish with this meditation, when we come to that meditation, Prabhupada says in the second canto of Bhagavatam, many places, when we come to that meditation, we become free. Prabhupada says that the desire for material enjoyment is evaporated. Sometimes he uses different terminology, but he says, by this engaging in full devotional service, our material desires become evaporated by the sun of Krishna Surya Sama Mayahaya Andaka, by the sun of Krishna consciousness that evaporates our material desires. And what is left is a desire to engage in spiritual activities, devotional activities. And the meditation to leave on is from the third chapter of the second canto, where Shonaka Rishi, his whole chapter, he's expressing his desire to hear what did Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit talk about. That's the beginning of the Bhagavatam, really. What did they talk about? They're great personalities, both of them. Right? Parikshit Maharaj is a Raja Rishi. He's a very exalted personality and not a normal king. And Savaya Bhagavato Raja Pandaveya Maharataha. He's a great Maharati on the Pandava dynasty. And he's a Raja Rishi. And Sukadeva Goswami is an exalted personality, sage. So when those two people got together, what did they talk about? He wants to find out what they spoke about. And that is helping us, that is whetting an appetite, and it's giving Sutta Goswami the opportunity to narrate the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the answer to one of the questions of the sages in Naimisharanya. Then he begins to answer. This is what they spoke about. And there, Shonaka Rishi, he has a series of verses that describe the proper use of the senses and the misuse of the senses, and how this material world is so designed to distract the living entity, and at the same time, there is a process to attract the living entity to a higher purpose. And there he says that if your eyes don't see the beautiful form of the Lord, they're useless eyes. Bahayate te nayane naranam. If you don't use your eyes to see God, to see Krishna, to see the devotees, then the eyes are useless. They're like the plumes on the peacock feather. They look beautiful, they're attractive, but they're useless. They don't have seeing power. So those eyes are like that. If we don't see the beautiful form of the Lord, lingani yasya, if we don't see the form of the Lord, then the eyes are no use. And what is the use of legs? If we don't use legs for going to the holy place, kshetarani nanu brajato hareyo, to go to the holy place of the Lord, then they're like the legs of, they're like the trunk of a tree. They're useless. We shouldn't have them. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada explains the importance of deity worship, seeing the Lord. How we see the Lord. We come for darshanati. At the end of the Prima Dwani Bhakti, Prabhupada said, darshanati ki jai. We come for this darshanati, so we see the form of the Lord, and the Lord sees us. First we come and we have a long list of prayers for God to give us this, give us this, give us this. Give us this. And then after some time we get exhausted of the list. Not to speak of God getting exhausted. We get exhausted of giving the list and we start to just be there for His pleasure. What can I do for you, God? That's the next level of praying. The first level of praying is to give me a nice wife and a nice husband and a promotion and to cut my mortgage and to do these things. And the next level is, okay, none of those happened, or they happened, but they would have happened anyway. So we just pray there that, please, Krishna, can I become an instrument in your mission? In your mission, so that we can become satisfied and self-satisfied. And Prabhupada says there that
It's very important to see this form of the Lord, because that purifies the desire for seeing. We have a desire to see, and the eyes are restless, chanchalam, like the mind. The eyes will go where the mind takes us. So in order to control the mind, to control the eyes, we have to practice seeing a form that is purifying, seeing a form that is transcendental, seeing a form that will inspire bhakti, and not to see the material, the form of the mundane form in the material world. And Prabhupada says there that surely if you can't go to the temple, then see the form of the Lord, because surely if you see this profusely decorated form of God, of Krishna, in a well-dressed and a well-decorated and sanctified temple, he said, surely that will infuse the mundane mind with spiritual inspiration. Surely that will infuse the mundane mind with spiritual inspiration. That's something that we need. That will inspire us. And that's indeed why we engage in the process of bhakti. He says, and it's not just about profusely decorating the form of the Lord, but he said, all the other things that go with that archana vidhi, the kirtan, the mantra, the offerings, the bhoga, everything that goes with it is an important aspect of the process for helping us to evaporate those material desires and to become attracted to our spiritual reality, so that we can become free from this pumsastriya mituni bhaya metta, this attraction to the opposite sex. And we can become really, really blissful, really happy and full of knowledge and connected with our eternal reality. So, any questions or comments? Is there an equivalent teaching in Chaitanya Charitamrita of this topic that we have to become free from this desire? Yeah. I mean, there are many, because the Chaitanya Charitamrita is a practical application. And Prabhupada said theoretical knowledge is not good enough. Book knowledge is not good enough. We have to have some example, we have to have some practical evidence of proof that it works. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita is that practical examples of people who either become bewildered or who have become free from their bewilderment. And of the highest level, one that we read recently, is Chota Haridas. And it's a very extreme case, because Chota Haridas, he goes to beg alms from a very exalted woman who's completely free from material desire, and she's on a higher level of transcendental realization. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood that he had done that he'd been to her, and therefore he completely rejected this Chota Haridas, and he takes a subtle form. He commits suicide and takes a subtle form and offers prayers to the Lord in that subtle form. But there in the purports, Prabhupada's explaining that this is the standard of the highest standard of sannyas, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't want to see the face of somebody who's in the renounced order of life, but they have intimate connection with a woman. And that wasn't just, you know, having a casual conversation with a woman. That wasn't just a woman. That was an exalted Nitya Siddha, liberated, eternally liberated soul. So that was the pastime is presented in the Chaitanya Charitamrita to illustrate and to highlight the importance of renunciation in the different ashrams, very much so. And in the pastime of that was Chodha, in the Krishnadas, when Krishnadas was traveling with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in South India, he was allured by the Bataharis. He was allured by these gypsy girls. He's a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's serving him personally, as a personal servant of the Lord, but he became attracted, he became bewildered by these gypsy women. And he left the association of the Lord for that level of enjoyment. And the same thing that is presented there is in the commentary, is that even a close associate of the Lord, someone who's connected with the Lord directly, physically connected with the Lord, can become bewildered by the material energy, by the opposite sex. So there, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are many examples of the importance of maintaining our focus and our concentration on the spiritual so that we don't become bewildered by the material. Maybe someone else would like to share more from the CC. Prabhuji? Sorry?
Most of our services, or any services that we do, are they all somehow or the other connected to the deity worship?
Are all of our services connected to deity worship? Well, I guess so, because if we can begin to develop a personal relationship with the deity, and that is a purpose for doing the engaging in deity worship, then we'll start to see that our connection with Krishna through the deity is not because we have a spot on the roster, but it's because we have affection for God, for Krishna, and we come to do something spontaneous for him. Eventually, that's the level that we get to. So everything that we do, when we go to the market, we can buy something special for him. Whatever we're doing, if we want to sing, we can come and sing for him. We can come and offer prayers to him. We can do many, many things for Krishna's satisfaction. And that will be our self-purification. So the more we can organize our day and our life around the deity, and that was Prabhupada's concept of in the Gita Nagari, that Krishna would be the center of the community and that everyone in the community would focus on the deity. One time I was in a temple in Indonesia called Gita Nagari Baru, and there the community, it's a village, and the whole village are devotees, and everyone in the village goes to the temple. Everyone in the village, the parents, the kids, everybody goes to the temple for the programs. So the 7 o'clock aarti is full. All the houses are empty. And everyone is in the temple for that program. So it's a very, it's a good example, a manifestation example of the deity is the center of the village. And in the village they have a loudspeaker. They have no electricity in this village, but they have a loudspeaker. So they have some solar energy for this speaker. And during the day, they recite the Gita and hear the verses of Sanskrit verses of Bhagavad Gita and the Indonesian translations over the loudspeaker in the village. So everything that they do, they remind that it's about Krishna. It's for Krishna.
Thank you.
good point. In the concept of being the servant of the servant is our connection to the deity. It's our connection to Krishna. We don't have a direct connect with Krishna. And through the Gaudiya Vaishnava, in our tradition, actually our connect is through the devotees. We connect through the spiritual master, we connect through our associates, we connect through the elders. We don't directly connect with Krishna because we need to become qualified to connect with the Supreme. So the King Kulishekar, his prayer was that let his birth, maj janma na palamidam madukai tabare, the fruit of his birth will be born when Krishna, Mukunda, accepts him as a servant of the 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 servant. Seven times removed, servant. So abritya. Abritya is a servant. So he wants to be identified as a servant. And that's helping him to realize or to connect with Krishna. And when the devotees are doing the Abhishek, recently we had Abhishek for the Gopanim festival. And the temple must have been very crowded and packed. Probably the altar was crowded and packed with all sorts of pujaris and pots and things like this. But the people in the temple are getting the same benefit as the people on the altar. Because we're all engaging in the same process. We're here, we're doing deity worship sitting here, and they're pouring the ingredients, but their deity worship's not higher than our deity worship sitting here doing the kirtan, or being there for Krishna. Sometimes we have a mentality that I don't like to the festival anymore. It's too crowded, especially in India. Too many people. I don't like going to the temple. I'm going to lock myself in the room today. Many devotees say that. What do you do at Gopanim in Mayapur? I just stay in my room. I don't go out. But actually, the festival is not for us. The festival is for Krishna. The festival is for Krishna's pleasure. So he wants to see us there. He wants to see us squashed in there. He wants to see us chanting together with the devotees. He doesn't want to see us in our room watching it on the TV. He wants to see us sweating it out that we made it to the temple. And it's not about me. I should be the number. I should be on the altar. I should be doing the... I should pour all the ingredients. No one else should pour the ingredients. Only me. But that's not the mentality. I came here, it's Krishna's birthday today. Not my birthday, it's Krishna's birthday. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's avibhav. Okay, anything else? Nothing.
Sometimes we get asked this question and such questions come up in the
Well, one response is that the type of the description, the graphic descriptions that we hear here in this third canto of Bhagavatam are within our purview. We have a reference point for them. They're very eloquent and they're very detailed, but they're on a gross platform. And we are also on a gross platform. And when it gets to, it says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said that this Srimad Bhagavatam is the original sex psychology. Because we have sex desire means that sex is eternal. It's in the spiritual world, Prabhupada says. It's in Goloka Vrindavan. between Radha and Krishna, but we can't comprehend what that means because we have too much of a gross conception of what sex life is. And this description of sex life here, and even Mohini Murthy, who's an incarnation of Krishna, but the attraction that's there and in other parts of the Bhagavatam, they're something that which we have as conditioned souls, we have a reference point for. It's not something that's beyond our comprehension. It's something that we have that reference point for, and therefore we can relate to it, and we can begin to understand as we read more and more that this is what it is. Material energy is exposed for what it is, and our material nature is exposed for what it is, and it's preparing us for a very high level of engagement. And Prabhupada said, unless we're free from sex desire, we shouldn't read beyond the second canto of Bhagavatam, because that's the lotus feet of the Lord. And we should meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. Before we get to the smiling face of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to be completely self-controlled. We have to be completely free from material sex desire, sense gratification. And so these are gradually, they're embedded pastimes and stories within other stories that are helping us to come to that level on a gradual progression, as you said. It's a progression. And that is... we're not getting anything too soon or too late in the Bhagavatam. Everything is given to us in its right, at the right pace, in the right dose. Bhavoshara shrota maro biramat. This medicine of Bhagavatam is administered in dislipic succession through the spiritual master and through the realized souls, so that we can become free and we can correct our misconceptions and our errant understanding. So it is progressive, and this is the time that we need to hear it within this context of this creation of Lord Brahma, because this is where it comes from. It comes from the beginning. It's not something that we just thought up after we invented Bollywood or we invented Hollywood or whatever it was, but this desire comes from the very beginning, right at the beginning. And this is putting it into perspective, historical perspective and practical perspective, and what to do. If we cultivate demoniac nature, we'll race after material energy. And if we cultivate spiritual nature and take shelter of the Daivi Prakriti, spiritual energy, we'll become free from that. And in that Ajamil pastime, Prabhupada says that Kanteya Paranijani Paranijani here. Name Bhakta Paranashati. Krishna's devotees won't be destroyed. They'll be protected by Krishna, by Lord Nrisimhadeva, by whoever we pray to, who we take shelter of. They will protect us from the attraction to the material energy gradually as we increase our attachment. Yayata Mamparaparyante, as we increase our love for Krishna, he will protect us more and more. So it is progressive, and this is the right stage time to introduce this. And then Mohini Murthy as a reminder, and Prachini Bahi. In the Prachini Bahi story in the fourth canto, we'll get great detail about the entanglement of the material energy and how Paranjana becomes a woman in his next life by meditating on this form. And it won't leave us. In the fifth canto also, we're going to get a good dose from King Rishabhdev to make sure that we don't become animals. Nayama deho deha bhajam niloke. Don't misuse a human form like a hog or a dog. Use a human form to get spiritual elevation. Paramasokyam tvanantam, to get that happiness of spirituality by doing tapo divyam, by doing transcendental tapasya. And in the seventh canto, Prahlad Maharaj is going to give good instruction. Don't become attracted to this material energy, because it's like the rubbing of an itch. It won't relieve the itch. It'll just become more and more aggravated, red, and it'll bleed and it'll ooze. Don't rub it. The attraction for the material energy should be ignored, not engaged. And then eighth canto, we'll hear many different pastimes. There we hear Mohinimurti, I guess. And then gradually we got purified. We get to the ninth canto, and we hear some very unusual stories in the ninth canto about even gender changes and different types of sexual engagements. And then, finally, we get to the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. After there's nothing, everything is exhausted. There's nothing new, you can say, under the sun. Everything is captured in Bhagavatam. But it's presented in the Bhagavatam in a way that is going to help us to put our life into perspective and to integrate our experiences or reintegrate our experiences and our exposure and our mental tribulations and our shortcomings and our successes into a portfolio of successful spiritual life of identity. I'm ready for this. I'm ready to take on this. Not take on. I'm ready to absorb myself in this pastimes and activities of Krishna. In the 10th canto. But there are many warnings not to jump to the 10th canto, not to jump to 10, 29, 35. And Prabhupada says many people, unscrupulous Bhagavad Katha reciters, they go straight to the 10th canto. And they talk in the 10th canto, but they're not free from sex desire. They're not free from material energy. And they talk from that, and it agitates them, and it agitates their hearers. And the hearers don't become attracted to Krishna. They might become attracted to Krishna as a personality, as something, but not as in a spiritual, a transcendental form. They have a good experience. They have nice music. They have a nice story. They have a nice guitar, and they feel good when they leave. But they don't chant Hare Krishna. They don't change their activities. They don't become spiritually inspired by that. And then you hear many descriptions of Krishna engaging with the gopis, which are on another higher level, a very, very high level, and that is something that wouldn't be in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, something that we might hear in the 10th canto, or something we might hear from the acharyas, Rupa Goswami or Raghunath Das Goswami, speaking about the intimate interactions between Krishna and the gopis. One time the devotees, just in this context, the devotees asked Prabhupada, did the women in Dwarka play tennis? Did they play tennis? The women in Dwarka, did they play tennis? And because there was talk about this ball, you know, the ball like this, and Prabhupada, first of all, he said no. And then in a couple of sentences later, you know, if you follow the dialogue, he says, maybe they did play tennis. But he said, only the women on the rooftops. There weren't men watching them. Grantara Jishimar Bhagavatam Kijay. Srila Prabhupada Kijay. Oh,